Todos queremos aprender a generar más dinero. Por eso te invito a que escuches Échale Podcast. Te saluda José Quintero y te invito a que sigas mi podcast, Échale Podcast, en Instagram y TikTok. Échale Podcast by José Quintero. Conversations about finance, the Latino community, motivation and much more. Echándole ganas a la vida, one episode at a time. Listen wherever you enjoy podcasts. Échale Podcast.
Hi, Scaredy Cats. We hope you guys are having an amazing day today. Our names are Sway and Liz, and we'd love to welcome you guys to the Scaredy Cats podcast, where we talk about all scary things such as true crime, the paranormal, dark history, conspiracy theories, and much more. So if you find any of those things interesting, all you have to do is add us to your favorites, sit back, grab some snacks, and relax as we talk about some of the most bone-chilling and mysterious stories on planet Earth.
And for the scary movie lovers, we also review the latest scary movies, and also if you have any stories you'd like us to talk about, please feel free to send those in at our social media pages at Scaredy Cats Podcast, and that's Scaredy Cats with a K.
Yes, guys, and you can also send them in at the email provided to you guys in the description of this episode. But before we start, we want to say Happy New Year's to you guys. At the beginning of this episode, we are going to be talking about just a little bit of goals that we have for the podcast to let you guys know what you should be, you know, expecting throughout the year, and then we're going to be jumping into the story.
Now, it is literally the year of 2024, and just saying that, it's insane. Isn't it, to think that like we're literally living in the year 2024, and it's like mind-boggling. Just yeah, like, and just imagine once like the numbers get more like what, imagine hitting the year like 3000,
because I mean like when you and me are gonna be 50, it's gonna be 2050.
Yeah, that's gonna sound weird. 2050.
Yeah, the year 2050.
It's that's insane. Just
gonna, yeah, honestly guys, time flies, guys. Like, it's crazy how fast 2023 went by.
Our goals for this podcast is just to grow it to like the next level, and hopefully eventually get more guests on this podcast, because we have been guests quite often for like my dad and my sister's podcast, which is Sip and Tea and Joey and Marie, and it's been so fun like to be on there and like to be guests. But I would love to definitely have guests on here.
We've even tried reaching out, obviously we're not as big, but we've tried reaching out to like, you know, Sam and Colby or some other, you know, paranormal investigators or people like that, you know, as well, to see if they would like to come on the podcast, because I think it'd be cool for just like anybody to share if they have had an experience with the paranormal or anything. So definitely that is one of our goals for this year, is to have more guests.
So that's our main goal, is just to grow big, get more guests, and have a better setup, and eventually work our way to, you know, having a podcast where we can put like on YouTube, you know, like a visual podcast kind of deal, because that would be really fun. So yeah, those are our big goals for this upcoming year, so stay tuned for that and follow us along the way.
We're gonna jump right into today's story, and we are gonna give you guys a quick warning, because as you read the title, it's about Edmund Kemper, and this story is brutal. There's a lot of, you know, graphic details about the case, so just letting you guys know, if you guys want to click off and tune in next week, you can. Just want to get that warning out the way. Edmund was born on December 18th, 1948 in Burbank, California. Edmund was a middle child. He had two sisters, a young one and an older one. Just like all other serial killer stories, Ed did not have a great childhood. His father, Edmund Kemper II, was a World War II veteran. Ed stated that his parents' marriage was damaging and that they rarely showed any kind of love to one another. But he would also describe his mother to be a very rude person. Ed's mom was named, I think her name was Clarnell.
Clarnell.
It's C-L-A-R-N-E-L-L. So we're going to say Clarnell. She was very verbally abusive towards her husband and her children. This then would cause Ed to display dark fantasies, which was related to death and his sexuality. Ed would often take his sister's dolls and decapitate their heads. And when he was in second grade, he began to fall in love with his teacher. He was caught stalking her outside of her house. Just thinking like a second grader doing this is like extreme.
Yeah, it's very extreme. It's like uncomfortable to think of that.
It's like an 8-year-old. That'd be creepy. Just imagine like you are at your house and you look out your window while you're having dinner. There's a little kid standing on the sidewalk just staring into your window. And
that's
he's from your class.
That's a really, really scary thing like, to picture. Imagine.
Yeah, that's scary. But it was said that he would wait for her to get in her car and he would just follow her all the way home. But the scary thing is, while outside of her house, he was holding a knife which belonged to his father.
Fast forwarding to the year of 1957, Ed's father ended up leaving the family because he couldn't stand Clarnell. So this caused their mother to lash out on them, and mostly just Ed. She then began to abuse alcohol, and her physical abuse towards Ed grew worse. Most people believe he had it the worst because he looked similar to his father, so she might have been letting out all her anger out on him because he reminded her of their father. Her physical abuse would later stop when Ed turned 15 years old, because at this point, Edmund was about 6'4", which that's a freaking tall kid. Dang. For being 15, but out of the fear that he might hurt her and his sisters, the mom locked him in a room in the basement. He would later report that this made him really sad because while everyone was sleeping on their beds, he was forced to sleep in a cold, dark basement. But Clarnell would not stop belittling Ed. She would constantly tell him that he wasn't going to be anything in life and that no one would ever want to be with him, and cause Ed to grow hatred towards his mother. And later this year, he would then run away from home. He said that he went to go look for his dad so he can live with them, and he ended up contacting his dad, who was living in Van Nuys, California at the time.
Ed would live with his father for a while until he was removed from the house by his own father due to the stress he was causing on his new wife. She stated that she was suffering from intense migraines caused by Ed. Keep in mind, at this time, Ed was only 15 to 16 years old, but I guess he was just too much to keep inside the house. So his father would then take him to go live with his grandparents, who lived in North Fork, California. He would later move in, and in an interview, Ed would state that his grandma was exactly like his mother. He stated that she was very emotionally and verbally abusive. He would later go on to become very violent, and it was said that he buried one of his family's cats alive in the backyard. And when he was a little older, he killed another family cat with a knife. Seeing this, his grandfather would later give him a 22 caliber rifle so he can, in quote, shoot rabbits. His grandpa thought that Ed had an interest for hunting, so I mean that's the reason he gave him the rifle. So he would then become very violent and started shooting down birds, cats, and different animals, so the grandma began to hide the gun away from him. But on August 27th, 1964, Ed and his grandmother were in the kitchen, and they ended up getting in a very bad argument, and with the rage Edmund already had built up, it pushed him to go grab the handgun and sneak behind his grandmother and shoot her in the head 3 times, killing her.
His grandpa was barely heading home from the store, so when Ed hears him pull up to the driveway, he walks up to him and also shoots him in the head, killing him as well. After he committed these murders, he stated that he just sat there looking at their bodies, and he remembers the rush of happiness flowing through his body. He then picked up the phone and called his mom and asked, in quotes, "I just shot and killed my grandparents. What do I do?" She then tells him, "You need to call the police," and if he didn't, she was going to call them herself. So Edmund hangs up the phone and dials 911 and tells him what he did. He would then get arrested at the age of 15 and was taken in for questioning. They asked him, "Why did you shoot your grandparents?" And Ed replied back, "To see what it felt like." Police would describe Ed as someone who has been overcome by complete evil. He was then handed over to the California Youth Authority, where he then would have a psychiatrist talk to him about his mental health, and they would also run an IQ test on him, and he actually ended up scoring about 140, which meant that he was smart and knew what he was doing. Then after the psychiatrist spoke to Ed for a few lessons, he was diagnosed as paranoid and psychotic.
Ed would later be sent to a maximum security facility for the mentally ill, but would then be released 5 years later in 1969, and due to his good behavior, the charges would be erased from his juvenile record. At this point, Edmund was now 21, and doctors told him that he should not move back in with his mother due to how she used to abuse him, and not only that, it would just be bad on his mental health. But since he didn't have anywhere to go, he decided to move back in with his mom until he was able to get back on his feet. His mother was living in Santa Cruz, California at the time. It was said that she moved there because she was offered a job at the University of California, but although Ed was out of jail, he still had to come back and check into the jail so they could see what he was doing, and they considered him a low risk person, meaning that he seemed to be doing great and didn't, you know, look like he was some sort of danger to the public. Ed would later live in various places in Northern California. He would return to live with his mom whenever he ran out of money. He ended up getting a job at the Department of Transportation in 1971, and his dream was soon to become a police officer, but he would later be rejected because he was too tall. He had reached the maximum height requirement. He weighed 300 pounds and was 6'9 at the time. Like, that's insane.
That's a huge big guy. Person. Yeah, like
300 pounds and 6'9.
That'd be terrifying to even see. Like, this guy, like how evil he was. Yeah, like how evil he was, but him being this big, like that's bone chilling.
Yeah. And even though he got rejected, he tried to keep himself involved with law enforcement, so he became friends with a lot of the state troopers, and this is when he got the nickname Big Ed.
So Ed would get invited to hang out with most of the police officers at bars and other gatherings. Ed would later purchase a motorcycle and would ride around acting as he was a police officer.
Which is really, like, we shouldn't be laughing because, I mean, it's sad. Like, that was his dream to be a police officer. But it's just, like, funny to picture, like, he actually bought a motorcycle and he was running, like, driving through the streets acting like a cop.
That, and after, yeah, I don't know. That's wild. Yeah. But during one of these rides, he ended up getting hit by a car where he injured his arm very badly. And some reports state that he also injured his head. He would later get a settlement of $15,000 from the other driver. With that money, he purchased a new car, which was an unmarked police car. During this time, Ed was also unable to work due to his injury. So instead of resting or finding something else to do, Ed went down a completely different path. Within a few weeks, he had his unmarked cop car and he noticed a lot of women hitchhiking in this area. He started to pick them up and he said that the first couple times he was practicing in order for him to come up with a technique that would make people feel comfortable in ways he could seem approachable. So he gave a few lady hitchhikers rides and would let them go. He would then offer to college students a ride. Their names were Mary Ann and the other girl was named Anita. They were both hitchhiking and trying to get back home, but unfortunately they never made it back to their homes. During the investigation, the police received a report on August 15th by someone who was hiking the woods in Santa Cruz, California. This person reported to have found a woman's head, and after further investigation, it was determined that it was Mary Ann's head. But unfortunately, when it came to Anita, her remains were never found.
It would later reveal that he stabbed and killed Anita and that he tried to strangle Mary Ann, but it didn't work, so he had to try something new. He said that he brought the bodies back to his apartment that he was living in at the time, and he removed their heads and hands, and he also confirmed that he did other things to the body. About a month later, on September 14th, 1972, Ed was driving and picked up 15-year-old Aiko. A few minutes into the ride, she caught a very odd feeling about him and tried to escape. He caught her and taped her mouth shut and tried to suffocate her by shoving his fingers in her nostrils. But that didn't work, so he grabbed the scarf that she was wearing and sadly strangled her and did other things to her body as well. He then locks her body away in the trunk and goes out to the bars and gets a couple of drinks. He hangs out with all his police friends and then returns back to his apartment and starts dismembering her body and decapitates her as well. The next day, he puts the head in a handbag. He throws the handbag in the back of his seat and goes to a court appointment, and until later that night, he would dispose of the hand and her head in different locations. Fast forwarding to January 1973, Ed continued to act on his murderous impulse. He picked up a lady hitchhiker named Cindy, who he shot and killed. He took Cindy's body back to his mother's house, who he knew wasn't at the house.
He would later take her to his old room, which, if you guys remember, was in the basement of this house. So while his mom was out of the house, he dismembered Cindy's body, cleaning up his mess, and the following day took pieces of her body and threw them into the ocean. He would then take her head and bury it in the mother's backyard, and he said that he buried it facing upwards towards his mother's window so she can watch her, because he said in quotes, "My mother always wanted people to look up to her," which is very, that's very creepy. Disturbing. Yeah. Very disturbing. But the following month, on February 5th, 1973, Ed and his mother got into a big fight. He said that he was filled with rage and wanted to kill, so he gets in the car, grabs his mom's campus parking sticker to a community college, and later states that the next good-looking girl he saw was going to die. He ends up seeing two students named Rosalind and the other one named Alice. He got them in the car, and he said while driving, he just turns around and starts shooting the girls. He then kills them and then turns into a hidden area where he grabs both bodies and locks them in his trunk. He would later decapitate both of the girls, and before dumping the bodies, he took the bullets out and dumped them into different locations. Fast forwarding to March, Ed was driving through San Mateo and noticed a few people hitchhiking. During this day, someone had reported to have come across heads while they were hiking. What made things difficult was that at the time of Ed's murders, there were two other serial killers named John Fraser and Herbert Mullins who were active in the area, so Ed was taking advantage of this. This is when Santa Cruz received the name as the murder capital.
Although nobody knew Ed was the killer, the press nicknamed him as the co-ed butcher. In April 1973, Ed would commit his last two murders. On this day, it was a Friday, he would go over to his mother's house, and as always, they got into a fight. His mother would later fall asleep. Ed said that he couldn't take it anymore, and that his anger towards his mother had been building up for years, and that he had been dreaming for the opportunity to, you know, basically kill his mother. So while his mother was asleep, he beat his mother's head with a claw hammer, then dismembered her body, and just like all his other victims, dumped her body parts in different locations. But he would keep his mother's head and did other things to it that we aren't going to get into because they are very extreme and graphic, aside from all the stuff that we're saying, like, it's just too much, so we're not going to get into it. But he also stated that after he propped up his mother's head by the fireplace and he would use it as a dartboard. Extremely disturbing, and I feel like I'm a puke right now. He then ripped out his mother's tongue and the voice box and tried to get rid of them by using the sink's garbage disposal, but since that wasn't working, he buried it. But remember that we said his last two murders. So after this one, the second one was that same night, he decided to call over his mom's friend Sally for dinner. She knocks at the door and Ed says, "Come in, it's open." Right as she opens the door and closes it, Ed jumps at her, strangling her to death after he hid her body in the closet and later that night did other things to the body, and the following morning flees the area in Sally's car. And he stated that he picked this specific friend of his mom's because she would always judge him basically when she'd come over, so she had a lot of strong opinions about him, and basically just like his mom, they would just like talk down on him.
This guy was definitely insane, but he went to rent a car and somehow ended up getting that car switched with a different one. He drove for about 18 hours and only stopped for gas and soda. Drives all the way to Colorado, and on April 23rd, he made a call to Santa Cruz Police Department to confess his crime. And they didn't believe him because, like we said, he was friends with a lot of the police officers, so since they didn't believe him, he turned himself into the police in Colorado, who then handed him over to the Santa Cruz Police Department. During his interrogation, he led police officers to the location where he had dumped the body parts at, and after finding all the evidence, the police department was shocked, because most of them had invited him over to their homes, which I think that, like, finding this out, I'd just be like, dang, like, I really let this person come in my home,
you like know? Like, how, just the luck that you had to have to, like, not tick off this guy while he's at your house, like, knowing,
and not to not even suspect anything, like, that's just insane. I mean, they hung out with him, so they couldn't believe all this time they were sitting next to a serial killer. He confessed to all the murders and was convicted of all murders in April 1973, and at the age of 24, he would then go on trial for his crimes in October of 1973, and he was then found guilty of all charges in November 1973 and got 8 life sentences. So Ed is currently serving his time at California's medical facility, and something that's very odd is that during an interview, Ed would be asked by a Cosmopolitan magazine reporter how he felt when he saw pretty girls, and he said in quotes, "One side of me wants to date her, the other side says I wonder how her head would look on a stick." That is like...
I mean, wow. Like, his answer is definitely, you know, sickening, but what's even odd for me is that why is a magazine, and if you guys know, this is a very popular magazine, you literally see them at grocery stores, Target, everywhere, you know, and they always have some sort of lady or guy in the front cover, so it's like, why are you asking a serial killer how he feels when he sees pretty ladies, you know?
It's weird.
And it's like, it's because they were doing their own research for their magazines, which I just think it's odd you'd think of asking a serial killer that.
Yeah, it's pretty odd.
But Ed was later up for parole in July 25th of 2017, but the California parole board denied him. During his parole hearing, he actually tried to take back his confession and said that it was very immature of him at the time, and that by confessing, he thought he'd be building up a case for his psychiatric plea for him to not be guilty for reason of insanity. So currently, Ed, like we said, is serving time and actually was teaching computer science inside the facility to some of the inmates. And it's also reported that he frequently opens his fan mails, which is completely weird and disgusting that there's people out there that look up to these kind of people.
And I just don't get it. Like, how weird people can be, like, when they send fan mail to serial killers.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just like, what? Like,
honestly, I don't know what goes through people's heads. Yeah. Like, find better role models.
Yeah.
Cause like, this why ain't are you, it. Yeah, this yeah. is not it. Like, why are you looking up to somebody that is a complete sicko that killed a bunch of people?
Yeah, it's terrifying, that's for sure.
But that'll be the end of today's story, guys. It definitely was a very, very graphic one. But thank you guys for hanging out with us today. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and follow us on all pages at the Scaredy Cats Podcast, and that's Scaredy Cats with a K. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review letting us know what you loved about it. We would really appreciate it. But without further ado, we are out.
And Happy New Year's, guys.
Peace.